Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
You start to be a little more open-minded, and you start to see the beauty in a lot more things when you're not so hard-headed.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from? The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast where we bring you interviews with the most fascinating figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotaro. This is episode 93 with Recognize and Burns of the group Mayday. Mayday got their start in Miami, Florida in 2003. They were a small group at first, but kept adding elite members of the city's music scene until they were a powerful six-piece with two rappers at the front. Our guests today, Burns and Recognize. They became local heroes with the release of their 2010 album, Stuck on an Island. The music on the album was upbeat and fun, but if you listen closely, the dark introspective lyrics gave a hint of where the group was soon to go. Shortly after that, they signed to Tech N9ne's Strange Music label, and the music on their following albums took a moodier turn to match the content of their lyrics. Their most recent record, Mersday, is a return to more upbeat sounds. As the title would suggest, it's a collaboration with the West Coast rapper Murs. Recognize and Burns took a break from recording at their studio in Miami to talk to us about their entire career, changes in their sound, and what happens when you record a video with Lil Wayne. If you enjoyed The Cipher, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on iTunes. The more 5-star ratings we get, the better chance we have of continuing to get great guests. And now, via Skype, here's Miami's finest barbecuing rappers, Recognize and Burns. Thanks for coming to The Cipher, guys. I'm here with Recognize and Burns of Mayday.
What up? Thanks for having us.
What are you in the studio doing right now?
Just making bangers.
We have a few projects on the go right now. We're just coming back off the road, so it's always like that interesting first couple of weeks where we're like banging our heads against the wall and sparking up ideas for these projects. So we have three projects of our own on the go right now. We have Burns has a solo EP. Gianni Cash, which is one of our producers and instrumentalists, has an album he's putting together. And then we're working on the next Mayday album for later in the year. And then we just had a week-long session with Murs. He was in town, and we were producing some records for his upcoming Strange debut solo album.
Nice. Well, yeah. It seems like a perfect segue then to jump into talking about Mersday, which is the collaborative record that you guys released, what was it, a few months back probably, right?
Correct, not that long.
I'd say probably about 6 months ago.
That was great. I first became aware of it when I saw you guys at South By performing stuff from it before the record came out, and like the chemistry is obvious. It just looked like you guys were having so much fun.
Yeah, and that was a crazy week for us too, because we had just finished recording the record like a week before South By, and then kind of just took those songs out there like on the fly to test it out and see what kind of vibe it was. So that was the first time we were actually performing those songs together live. So it was a weird, like kind of scary, but also like at the same time exciting time, because it was just cool and we were flying by the seat of our pants. But it ended up being really fun.
Scary because you might not remember all the words since you just written them.
We had just like recorded some of the tracks we did in the set like not but a week or prior to that, so it was just like oh, by the way, we're gonna do these live in front of South By next week. So
the way you guys interacted, you know, definitely seemed like the three of you seemed to get along perfectly on stage there. What was it like recording?
That's great, man. Murs is like he's such a friendly guy. Anyone who's ever met him in the industry knows he's such a nice, like genuine person. So he's not hard to get along with. And then some artists that you work with that have been in the game longer than you or have like a longer rap sheet, so to speak, might come in and feel a little threatened by like us trying to produce them. And we're very hands-on with what we like to do when we produce for someone. So or work with anyone. So he was actually ultra cool about that. And he was like admittedly
rapidly taking a step back in some areas where he would normally have full control just to let us do our thing. So it was really cool, man. It was a great vibe, great energy. He loves Miami, and you know, he fit right in, bro. He just started drinking Cuban coffee, and that was it. We never looked back.
That record, you know, coming off Take Me to Your Leader, coming off Believers, it's a bit lighter than that, and even than Wreck, than some of your solo stuff.
Yeah. I think Murs like got familiar with he was already kind of familiar with our back catalog, and the album right before we signed to Strange, which is called Stuck on an Island. He was a big fan of that album, and he liked how lighter shaded a lot of the material we had back then was. And then admittedly, when we signed Estrange, you know, like we grimied up our sound a little bit to show like Tex fans that we were into that vibe as well. And just kind of like, I think maybe we did it subconsciously, but you know, we did definitely dirty up our sound.
My brain is still rattled from the shock. When they leave it in the box, it's enough to call a medical yacht. Stop, watch, get it locked when I rock. Let them all just hop the block. Okay. Better save your name. Get your kiddies on now, this snake and bad is cut for stranger danger.
So Murs came in, and that was his initial thing when we met up to talk about the album. He said, look, I want to make sure that when we go in, we don't do another dark record on Strange. I wanted to, you know, hark back to some of the stuff that you guys were doing before Strange, and some, and my music is a lot lighter and a lot more lighthearted.
I think I need my own parade. I think I need my own parade. Hey.
It's Merch Day, baby. And don't it sound so crazy? Hey. Come on and hop up on the bandwagon. Grown men for the win, no pants sagging. It's an all souls processional.
So yeah, it was a conscious decision to like make the album feel like a party and make it feel positive and fun.
It's interesting you say that about Stuck on an Island, right? Because that record, you know, musically for the most part, it does sound like lighter and kind of happier than the records that follow. But lyrically, not really. Like lyrically, it's, you know, a lot of the themes are still pretty serious and dark, and the topics are still, you know, a lot of the same things you would go on to talk about later.
Give me that torch judge in the drawer of slugs and hell at hell shells in a storm of blood. Innocent show love in the floor they hug. Evidence shows up on the morning of they all. Max Payne again, the bullet.
Yeah, no, definitely. We've always had like a I don't know how to describe it, but we've always definitely taken on very heady topics, and I love moody music, and I'm like it's funny because friends will hit me up and be like, yo, is everything all right, or is everything going good in your life? And I'm like, nah, I'm a happy person, like I'm a smiling, like happy go lucky kind of guy, but for some reason I've always liked moody music, so that's where I tend to want to go, and then, you know, we try to find the balance, and I feel like the first few albums when we signed to Strange was us matching the music a little more to some of like the serious heady topics that we've always kind of tackled since we all joined up. But yeah, now it's kind of like been these last albums, and I feel like our next few albums are going to be us trying to get back to the perfect balance of all of that.
When you were making Stuck on an Island, was that like a contrast you were thinking about, the contrast between like what you were talking about and the sound of the record, or did that just kind of develop?
I just think at that time we were like, yeah, I think it was like it would kind of develop naturally, and we loved up tempo. We were heavy up tempo music because we were thinking about our live show that we were crafting. So I think also it wasn't even that the music was all that much brighter. It was just a lot faster. So it had an up tempo like hype vibe, whereas like we consciously made a decision on Take Me to Your Leader to slow everything down.
Yeah, that record definitely has a lot of epic sounding stuff. So Stuck on an Island, that was that the first record that you did as a six piece?
Yeah, it was. We did an EP. We did a couple of EPs when we first linked up, the six of us. But that Stuck on an Island was the first full length since we had that manifest with the six.
Okay, and what's the history of the group? Burns, you were there first, right? It was you.
Right.
It was a duo.
Yeah, it was me and my homie Plex. And then we just, you know, we started picking up members, basically, you know. Recognize always was kind of hanging out with us, like on the sidelines, you know, doing his solo thing. And then we just kind of linked up and made it happen, you know.
Yeah. Where'd the other members come from, the other instrumentalists?
Just they're all from Miami, man. You know, they're all players from Miami and players in the scene. They were in different bands and stuff like that. And we just kind of started to, like, handpick the people that we liked, you know, and started to bring them over to the dark side.
Nice. And what is the lineup now? Does it vary from, like, the live to studio?
Well, right now, the lineup live is a four-man lineup. It has a percussionist, Noms. It has a bassist / DJ and Geo, and then me and Rec. But then we also have my homie Plex, who he doesn't go out live with us anymore, but he still produces and stuff like that. He just doesn't like the tour and all that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about your sound is it's rap rock, I guess. I know that term is kind of loaded and you know, conjures up images of yeah, you know, groups we'd rather not think about.
Right.
But the songs are really, you know, musically rock songs, you know, really, yeah, really well constructed and well played. And, like, you put a lot of thought into, like, you know, guitar tones and stuff.
We're a band and we like live music and we like that shit to come across in our music. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's enough keyboard music out right now. Like, I'm not really going to add much to that pile. You know what I'm saying? Like, so we try and go the other direction and give some more, like, textural kind of, like, sounds and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Rec, I know you weren't in the group originally. You were kind of doing a solo thing, and your solo stuff, kind of like early mid aughts, like right before you joined Mayday, was like a lot of more traditional rap in terms of the production and the drums, and even some of the guest appearances and stuff. How has your style changed since joining Mayday?
I think it's broadened a lot and gotten sharper, because when we were both signed to the same independent label in Miami called Southbeat. And I'd kind of met Plex and Burn in the scene, and I was definitely like not close-minded is the wrong word, but I definitely had like a not so broad image of the music that I was making at the time. But I enjoy like such a wide range of music. So when I started watching Mayday record their first album, I was kind of like in my other studio, like being like, wow, this is the kind of music I want to make. Like, this, I love the way their stuff sounds, and the topics and themes are all like super dope to me. So when I joined up with Mayday, it was like, I definitely feel like I took the tools that I was using and sharpened them, and then added me in a few. Because when I first joined Mayday, I wasn't really singing much, and Burn and Plex were very like vocal about getting me to sing and start singing live, and that all like developed in the you know, 4 or 5 years I've been in Mayday now, and I feel like it's gotten to a place where I'm very comfortable with it.
Yeah, I actually wanted to bring that up, the singing stuff, because it's not like, you know, in a lot of hip hop, you'll have, you know, verse rapped and then a hook that's kind of sung, pasted on by, you know, someone who's not an integral part of the group.
Yeah.
With you guys, the moments that are sung, they really feel integral to the songs. Like, how do you guys manage to balance, you know, the sung and rap sections of your music?
I think it's just like finding the moments where it works the best and not being afraid of it. That, because I started singing when I was a kid, and then hip hop totally demolished that for me, because like in our era of like growing up and listening to hip hop, singing wasn't really that cool. So unless you said like you bring in Mary J. Blige or whatever and she does a hook for you. But like other than that, it wasn't cool to really be singing. You're supposed to rap. So I stopped paying attention to singing and went wholeheartedly into rap. And I think now we've been trailing back to getting to a level of comfort where we're not afraid to do that. And now, obviously, it's way more accepted because there's way more people singing. Even when they can't really do it, they do it anyway. So it's just us finding that balance. And we're big fans of like pop, of a lot of pop songs, a lot of rock songs, classic rock songs. So we just we take a little bit of what we've known growing up listening to and then add it into what we also grew up in hip hop listening to.
Yeah. So actually, you mentioned singing growing up, and you got that tune Winding Road, the solo tune there.
Yeah.
And you mentioned very briefly, almost in passing, to the point where I wasn't sure if it was literal or not, where you mentioned like being a theater kid.
It's too late, I left my theater camp, and plus I cheer for a chance to leave your ear in a slant.
Yeah, it was. My grandfather is actually like a famous comedian in London in the 60s and 70s. His name was Carju Robinson, and he was on Benny Hill a bunch of times, and he was an actor. He was mostly a comedian, but he was also like a lightweight actor. So when I was growing up, I was into music because my parents were in bands, and my father's a songwriter to this day. But I first wanted to be an actor, so I started going to theater school when I was young. Me and my sister, we were in theater summer camps, and like I just wanted to be an actor, but I also loved music, and then started kind of trailing away from that when I went into high school, because the thing was in Miami, like to go to the theater schools, you'd have to go to the magnets, and they were always in super rough neighborhoods. So I went to middle school for 3 years in a neighborhood that was just like rugged and super racist back then. So like to go as a white kid at the school, like no matter what your background was, like you were getting your backpack stolen, hit over the head, like it was rough. So when I came out of that, I was like, high school magnet program, maybe not so much, you know, because I was just like so tired of like the harassment. So I ended up going to regular high school, and then I just started to drift more into music. But I still would have loved to have like pursued it somewhere or another. If we ever got to the point where like me and Burns could go like try out for roles or read for a part or something, I'd be all the way into it.
Nice. And so right around, you know, as you got into rap, I think some of your first experience was in the battle scene, right?
Yeah, because I lived in Hollywood, which was like 20 minutes north of Miami, and nobody rapped in Hollywood. It was like me and like three other guys. So it was like, it was cool because it was easy to become popular at it. Like we were in there like rapping on the garbage can outside of lunch or whatever, and everyone saw it because it didn't happen a lot. But there was just no networking, no like place to go, no connections, nobody making beats, nobody challenging us at all. So I started to drive down to Miami, and the only way that I could like kind of break into the scene was through these jams, these b-boy jams where they were battling. And then that was the only way anyone was paying anybody any respect or mind if they weren't from the scene or didn't go to the same high school. So I was like, all right, well then fuck it, I'm gonna start battling. I'm gonna go in and do my thing. So I started getting into the battle circuit to try and make the connects. And then I ended up loving it and staying around as long as I possibly felt that I was doing, making some headway in it, and ended up being a lot of fun. And I met most of the friends that I have today through that scene.
Interesting. And I think the battle of yours that most people might know was the one that was televised on MTV, right?
This is the main event. This main event is sanctioned by MTV and Rockefeller Records. The purse is $25,000 in a recording contract with Rockefeller Records. And in the blue corner, defending his undefeated record, battling out of Miami. Give it up for Recognize.
Correct.
Yeah. I saw a little bit of that, of at least the final round. And the whole thing just seems so surreal. You know, Sway hosted, and they actually had the artists in a boxing ring, and people from Rockefeller were the judges, and Just Blaze was spinning. It was just a very, I mean, I know what it looked like sort of from on screen, but what was it like for you?
Yeah, no, super, super surreal. It was, I was 19 at the time, so it was just like, you know, and then like just really hungry, super, super hungry, excited to be there repping for Miami. And then on top of that, like winning it and thinking like, oh, this is it for me. I'm going, like, you know, and it was just like the whole experience was a humbling one, and super surreal, because it helped me. It opened a lot of doors for me and got me into sessions with producers I wanted to work with over the next few years. And yeah, it was dope, man. It was also surreal because you had people like Kanye there who wasn't really nothing like he was today. Like he was still just the producer guy. He hadn't really gone into being an artist. I think like Through the Wire was about to come out around that time. So it was just interesting to see and meet all the people that were there involved. And it's like you said, it's surreal. It's like a whole nother life to me now.
One of the announced prizes for that was supposedly a contract with Rockefeller, which
yeah,
anyone who knows your career knows that didn't exactly materialize.
Yeah. It was supposed to be a single deal. And then at the time I think they had like 15 artists and a handful of them on the website we hadn't even heard or hadn't been released yet. And yeah, they didn't try to contact us. And then I went on TRL that next following Monday, and nobody from Rockefeller showed up or contacted us about like trying to pursue the single deal. So we just walked away and went back to Miami and started building.
Okay, well, you know, if they ever get at you again, you know, whatever, whatever shape Rockefeller's in now.
Yeah.
Cool. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the kind of chemistry between you two. Like Burns, you were there first. What about hearing Wreck rap made you think, oh, he'd be great to have in the group?
He's always a great like freestyle artist and rapper, man, in the scene. So he was always like a gunner, you know what I mean? But what really sold it for me was the fact when I heard him sing, you know, that was like the kind of the missing piece that I needed in Mayday, you know what I mean? To do the kind of music that I wanted to make, you know, I needed somebody that could take us to another place musically, you know, at least farther than I could, you know, I can only sing so much, you know? So it was just part of the whole plan to have him in. And then on top of the fact that, yeah, he was this great rapper and he already had his own kind of movement going, it didn't hurt, you know?
Yeah. So you guys do pretty much everything in-house, you know, just the five or six of you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ever tempted to work with outside producers?
We have. Last album, we worked with Infamous, who worked with, he does production for like Wayne and a few other people. And it was cool. You know, we like collaborating with whoever, dude. You know, it's just, our workflow is like so heavy. Like we're in the studio making music every day that it's just like a time thing, you know, like the time to work with somebody else is very hard to like set aside because, you know, it takes like weeks, you know, to like establish a rapport and then really start doing stuff. It just takes a lot of time, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And it seems like you guys actually concentrate on building songs rather than, you know, loops or whatever.
100%, man.
Cool. And speaking of collaborations, you know, you guys have collaborated with an incredible variety of people. Like I was really, you know, re-listening to your stuff. I was just struck by both solo and as a group, you know, there's been Dell and, you know, MERS, obviously, Rascats, Dead Prez, Ace Hood, just like, there doesn't seem to be, it's not like, oh, only the underground people or only the political people or only the mainstream people or only the people who are going to like get me a look into a new audience.
Yeah, no, for sure. We're super proud of I think we talked about it. It comes up every now and again in conversation because we haven't really focused on it. But then when you really like chronicle it and look back, like we've worked with a lot of people and a lot of people of great merit and people who we like respect. So and it like you said, there's no pattern to it. It's for us, it's always just been people who are down to work and that were open minded to what we were doing. So we love all kinds of styles of music. And like I can speak for everybody. When we were younger, we're a lot more hard-headed about like, oh, the real hip-hop this or real that or whatever. And then, you know, as you get some age, like get some years onto you, that you start to be a little more open-minded and you start to see the beauty in a lot more things when you're not so hard-headed. So we're all like that. And I think our feature list has definitely shown people that we're down to work and it's more about the connection rather than like where the person comes from or what kind of music they do.
Yeah, and I wanted to take it all the way back for a second to Quicksand.
Sabotage, it's a sabotage. You dodge your destiny, you fall to complacency. My father's questioning my drive. Worried if I survive, I laugh it all. Put inside, my feelings won't subside. I worry that.
I think the first song where a lot of people got to know you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Miami classic.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. You know, big hit. The video is a hit. And it's more of like a hip hop track in terms of like the groove and the drums and so forth than a lot of the stuff that would follow it. You know, why did you guys move from something like that into more of a rock sound?
Man, that's a good question. I don't know, man. That's just, you know, it's just kind of us touching the bases, you know? I mean, yes, our sound has changed a lot, but at the same time, it hasn't changed in terms of like the aesthetic, the kind of drums that we use, the kind of, you know, boom bappiness that we like, you know? So, you know, and the thing is that back then too, when we made Quicksand, we didn't know how to play instruments, you know, we only knew how to play samplers, you know? So like our whole like progression in music came like hip hop first. Like we learned how to DJ first. Then we learned how to use samplers. Then we learned how to make beats with samplers. And then we got a record deal. And then when we got the record deal is when we were like, man, we should learn how to like fucking play music, you know, which is basically how it went down, you know? So I think that's just what it is like us learning how to play music as we went along. And so our records got a lot more elaborate and a lot more musical, you know?
Yeah. And on that song, the very first words of the first song, you know, a lot of people heard from you are an homage to the Beastie Boys.
Totally, man. Sabotage. 100%. 100%, man. They've always, that's always been like, well, you know, I would loved how they would like, how they would, you know, play, have an instrumental album and then have a hip hop album and then do a fucking punk rock album. And then when they did Saturday Night Live, they would do one setup all just doing live music. And the next setup, they would do their hip hop shit. And it was just like, man, like, that's the kind of shit that we are, man. We're just like really, I don't know, specialization is for insects, man.
I like that. I'm definitely going to steal that. And, you can hear, you know, one side of the Beastie Boys, the kind of like group interplay, you know, that kind of like Beastie Boys, Run DMC style thing on, you know, throughout, but especially on the Mursday record. What they think is a game, going full be small for the money and fame. I'm battering it such a way to pick up some damage and fix up your bangs. Take a bite of the game, new rules, new aim, and a game called strange.
Yeah, I mean, that was totally like on purpose, and we wanted to do that, and we wanted to do some fun group rap and shit, and the Beastie Boys did it the best, you know?
We definitely wanted to prevent it from sounding like we just put slapped Murs onto a Mayday album, which could be very easily be the sound if we weren't careful. So Murs was super conscious about that coming in, and we met and talked about it multiple times and decided like, okay, we need to make the album sound as cohesive as possible and make it sound like we're one unit rather than two people coming together to do one album.
Right, and I think that was the reason for even using the joint name, right? It's not, the record's not attributed to like Mayday and Murs, right? It's Murs Day.
Right.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Probably my favorite song on that is Bitcoin Beezy. Flash in the pan, hella money in my hand. Smash for the stands just so I can feed my fam. Never crash in the land when I'm trying to get the grand. I got 50 Bitcoin worth about 100 grand. Yeah. What? How on earth did you come to write a song about Bitcoin?
I gotta give that to Burns.
Man,
Burns,
we just I've always wanted to write a song about Bitcoin, and then it just so happened we were talking to Murs about it, and he was like, man, I want to do a song about Bitcoin too. And then there you go. And then the whole thing is like, we didn't know how to approach it. We just figured like, let's just pretend like we have Bitcoin and this is our life, instead of being like an educational song about what Bitcoins are. You know what I mean? Like, just like whatever, you know, like this is just, we live in a world where Bitcoins exist, and like that's just what's, you know.
And with the recent drop of Bitcoin prices, our ratio on the song is probably not very accurate anymore.
Right. Yeah. I think maybe.
Definitely not worth a couple hundred grand.
Yeah. So you guys reference a lot of movies and TV in your records, especially, you know, on the going all the way back to the Stuck on an Island record. You obviously reference a ton of island themed things. There's like, you know, the Island of Dr. Moreau and Lost and so forth.
Yeah.
On Dig It Out, I love the Mad Max reference. Kicking the dust on the life I live. You see, I'm Mad
Max with an axe and a minus wiping kid. I'm looking for the crew. Oh, yeah, cool, man. They got that new one coming out. The new one looks incredible. But I always feel like the percussionist in our band is from Venezuela, and we talk about it sometimes. He doesn't watch a lot of TV, and like when he came to the States, he wasn't aware of a lot of like things in the, you know, pop culture world. And I always felt like my favorite thing about hip hop is that rappers are always like pop culture historians and documentarians, and like you have to be up and current with what's going on to kind of get a lot of the references. It's like watching Family Guy in a sense. Like you can't really get all the jokes in Family Guy unless you're up on pop culture and current today references. So it's cool because if you know it and you're up to date, then you're getting the nod. And if not, then it kind of makes you go investigate like, oh, what is Mad Max, or what is this, that, and the third? And we've learned so much about that from hip hop. So I felt like it's always been in us to put it in the music as well and balance it with things that everybody can understand.
Definitely. And changing tacks a bit, one of your newer songs that I really loved was Marathon Man, which is a tune that I guess I don't want to say it's about, but maybe was inspired by the Boston Marathon bombing. All I heard was the explosion, and now I can't even feel my fist. Smoke all around my eyelids. Lady can't find a kid. It's so loud, it seems silent, but I'm still trying to reach the end.
Right.
Although it's about that, in a sense, it's not didactic. It's not like, oh, the bombing people is bad or whatever.
We had the conversation when it went down, and like the worst thing, and whatever, not to knock anyone else, but the worst thing that I always feel is like whenever a tragedy happens or something like of that magnitude happens across the world, the first thing is like songs pop up, people start selling shirts, and like some of the worst songs went, like, it's all done with a great intention, I would love to believe, but some of the worst songs are just like, they feel like, here, like, buy this shirt, you know, and it's very like, it just doesn't really speak to the current event. So Marathon Man was our attempt at speaking at something that definitely like affected us without doing the huge song and dance and making it into a product of its own.
Yeah. R.E.M., which Rec I know is a solo for you, definitely, you know, another really affecting tune.
If you blink those eyes at me again, I'll know that you're scared. But you don't have to fear the other side, I'll just meet you there.
Can you talk about the process of writing it, especially the hook? It's really melodic and really pretty.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I wanted to do I wanted to do a project about, like, I've always been fascinated with, ever since I seen Waking Life, I've always been fascinated with, like, lucid dreaming and the subconscious. So, like, REM was an idea that I wanted to do a project all about lucid dreaming. And REM was kind of, like, one of the first stabs at doing that. And then we all liked the record so much that when everyone at Mayday heard it, we talked about putting it on a Mayday project. And then that's how I ended up on Take Me to Your Leader, because it fit so good, like, tone-wise with the rest of the album. So it was really just written out of my obsession with lucid dreaming, really, was the main topic.
Wow. And so how do you determine what songs go on what kind of project? You said right now you're working on three things simultaneously. I know that's also been the case in the past, you know, working on solo stuff and maybe, you know, collaborations with Tech and Mayday Records and so forth. Like with a record like that, you know, with REM, for example, like you envisioned it as a solo tune. It ends up on a Mayday album. Like how do you figure that out? Do you just like flip a coin or something?
You put it on the table, and what I love about Mayday is it's like it is two things. One, it's very democratic, even though there, you know, you get your debates here and there. Like everybody gets along and respects each other to a degree that I like could only function around. And the second is that we make so much music that it makes it a little easier. You don't feel the need to hold on to something so much because music's being made every day, and we try to crank out so much material that it doesn't feel like we're in the desert fighting for gems. You know, that helps a lot. And you know, there's the odd bickering here and there, but most of the time it's very democratic. And also when we did REM, I was in a place where I was really trying to still like put down for Mayday and earn respect. And like, you know, I wanted to do solo project because I had been working on one before I joined the group, but the Mayday had become my priority. So really there was nothing that I wanted to, like, you know, if Mayday was into that record, then it was on the Mayday album for me.
Yeah, and you had a solo project structured as a therapy session.
Yeah, like I ended up kind of keeping I love kind of loose concepts and records like that. So I ended up kind of going into that realm. I didn't go all the way with the Dream project. Maybe we'll do it as an album down the road. But yeah, still tried to keep a theme to the solo project I did.
Yeah, and this was The War Within. So it's, you know, it's structured as a therapy session with the therapist, Dr. Psychosis, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sort of prodding you to kind of go deeper.
Mr. Miller, correct? My name is Dr. Kosis, but you may call me Psy. We are here today for your psychotherapy session. I want to reassure you before we begin that you cannot be made to do anything under hypnosis that you do not want to do. This session will be for exploring your deepest and darkest fears.
Do you feel like you actually learned anything about yourself in the process of creating that record?
Yeah, I definitely did. I feel like sometimes there's a threshold for me about, like, I know people think I love, well, I said it myself, but people say that there are a lot of our stuff is dark and moody, and I feel like on that record there's a couple of notes here and there, especially Rise being one of them.
Hold your head up and be strong.
Unless they find somebody on time, or even hear another voice up on the phone line. You ain't alone, you know. We too feel the balance of the positive and negative. I've been wanting just to talk with you all for the prosperous, but you acting like your own nemesis.
Normally, like, there's a certain tone that I don't normally want to go to myself. And when we ended up going there and ending the album with it, the fans really, really loved that song. So that showed me something about, like, a little more of the positive outlook where I don't often want to go. And, you know, it felt a little Hallmark to me at first, but people really like it, struck a chord with people. So I learned that there's definitely a light to the shade that needs to be visited.
Yeah. And something that I was thinking about the two of you that you have in common is that neither of you were born in the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that being, I know you both moved here as children, but do you think that being from foreign countries, you know, affected your outlook at all?
For sure.
Oh, yeah, man. It made I think everybody in the band are like, you know, transients, you know? So I think everybody kind of, we all have that perspective, you know?
And that kind of is what makes the kinship of people from Miami, because Miami is the melting pot of, you know, no, very few people are actually from Miami. A lot of people are brought in. So it's like this strange kinship where, like, we're all so different, but Miami becomes like our, you know, our common bond.
And Burns, you actually spent most of your formative years in Venezuela, right? You were there till you were like 12 or so?
Well, I moved around a lot, dude. I lived in Venezuela, then California, then Mexico, then I ended up in Miami.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
Yeah, I was all over the place, man. You know what I'm saying? I kind of, every like 4 years, my parents kind of picked up and went to another country or state or city.
Okay. What did they do?
My dad is like, he was basically a glorified salesman. You know what I'm saying? He sold computer parts and computer stuff and all that kind of shit, you know? Well, but he just focused on like Latin America. You know what I'm saying? So it was like anything in Latin America, anywhere where there was business, he would pack us all up and we'd go, you know?
And what do you think, moving around so much, like, how did that affect, do you see that seeping into your music in any way and the stuff you write about, or?
Yeah, definitely. I know this is a stereotype, but I tend to think that people that are performers in general are people that are, you know, are moved around a lot and stuff like that, you know, having to like meet new people at a school like every year and shit like that, you know, gets you kind of used to having to like perform, you know what I'm saying? So I think that kind of prepared me for what I do now, you know, and like touring and everything that I do. I'm just very comfortable like on the road, you know?
So one kind of chapter in Mayday's career that is a little unusual that actually didn't involve the two of you was your stint as a backup band, at least in videos, for Lil Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Big ups to Lil Wayne. You know, he did a lot for us just by that small little gesture of putting us on, you know?
Yeah. How on earth did that happen?
It happened just, you know, man, Miami's a small town and we were grinding. We're on our grind. And it was like, at that time, we were like running around. We showed up on T-Pain's video. We showed up on Wayne's video. And it was like, you know, through our connects, through our management and everything, we were able to find out that Lil Wayne was, you know, he was in the middle of doing his rock project and he needed a band. So we, you know, he checked out some videos of ours and some music and stuff and he was down. And then what was great for us is that when we showed up, we actually bonded, you know, in between takes, we would actually like play music and he would rap and we would like have a good time. So much so that he was like, he wanted us to come back for more videos. And then it ended up that he wanted us to like play for him at his going away party when he was going to jail. So, I mean, you know, he was like, he's just like, when he likes something, he's like one of those guys, man, you know, he's like, come on, let's go, you know, no questions asked, let's do it. He's just, man, you know, I just think he's a real cool dude, man.
Wow. So you guys were there for the filming of those videos?
Yes.
There was one of them that actually looked like it was filmed more or less in public.
Yeah. I forget which one of the two songs it is, but it's like it's shot out, you know, on a rooftop on South Beach. And then like they wanted a bunch of like real footage of, you know, Wayne out there in the streets and real crowd reactions. They were kind of like trying to emulate that YouTube video, you know, Streets Have No Name or whatever, when they're on the rooftop, you know, they like that was the vibe that they were trying to do for the video, you know.
How did you feel when shots of him wearing the Mayday T-shirt actually ended up on camera?
That was another thing. I mean, like, that, like, he just showed up on set and he was like, yo, I want one of those shirts. And, like, and then we were just like, is Wayne about to put on our shirt for this video? And then boom, he just did it. And then next thing you know, like, we have like executives at Universal and Warner or whatever, like asking like, who the fuck is this band? And why the fuck is our number one selling artist wearing their fucking clothes? Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, it was such a what the fuck moment, man. It was amazing.
So
nice. And you guys played his Super Bowl party.
Yeah. Yeah, man. We played that and it was cool, man. You know, Drake was there before he was like super huge, and it was a nice vibe, man.
You really had no notice of that, right?
Yeah, we got the call to play that show like while we were watching
during halftime.
Yeah, during halftime at the Super Bowl.
Like, okay, be ready at the end of the fourth quarter. You're going.
Yeah, pretty much. It was pretty amazing. It was an epic day. And we had just the day before that, shooting the video. We right after shooting the video, we had a show that night. We were opening for Goody Mob and Nas. So like that dude, at the end of that weekend, it was like just blackout for the rest of the week.
Definitely. I wanted to jump back up for a second to one of your songs that I really loved, which is the tune Technology.
Even with all this technology, my friends still find it hard to talk to me. I'm out of reach here. Even with all this,
it's a song about kind of feeling isolated and out of touch despite having, you know, countless electronic ways of, you know, supposedly connecting with people. What inspired that tune?
Yeah, that was just like us wanting to talk about, you know, what everybody wants to talk about, which is what the fuck is this technology really doing to us, you know? And that's just us trying to be good songwriters. And I felt like that was a good, you know, that was a nice little catchy ribbon to tie it all together with, you know? And it just worked, man, you know?
We've always been super conscious about, like, the song, like, instead of creating things that aren't really existing in our world for the subject matter, we turn songs out of conversations, you know, and what's crazy to me now looking back on that song is that we were talking about that disconnect and that weird strange feeling of, like, you know, of singularity with technology and social medias and social networks and stuff like that, and that was like 5 years ago. And it's only gotten extremely worse. So it's like crazy to think back now how like we were feeling that vibe then, and it was only kind of like felt like the dawn of what it is right now, 5 years, 6 years down the line.
Right, right. Before Twitter, before Tinder and Snapchat and so forth. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, definitely. And so I think, you know, the final like sort of individual song that I think I wanted to talk about was Lando's Jam.
Head in the clouds, but I'm making my way back down. Looking for high ground. Now I'm making my way back down.
Back down, call it a numbers game, but who's the croupy eight? Writing for reasons that I'm still to understand one day. Use me, throw me away.
Which I really love, and like the tune about the marathon bombing, it's like inspired by Lando Calrissian. It uses images of gambling and clouds, but it's not really about him.
Right, straight up.
I guess I want to dig into that a little more, like, When you're writing a tune, like, how do you manage to do that? Like, have sort of signify something without writing something super heavy-handed?
Man, that's a tough one. That's a tough one to put into words. I guess it's just kind of like paying attention to subtlety along the line. I've never been like me personally, never been a flashy kind of person or like put it in your face kind of person. So I like subtlety, you know, and I feel like we have a common bond in that, me and Burns, and we like to say shit without having to scream it, you know? And there's just, it's just beautiful when you're able to tie something together like that. And a lot of people pick up on it. And the beauty of subtlety to me is that people will read things into the music that you might not have even intended at first, and pick out things out of the music that, and be like, yeah, no, when you talked about this, you know, it kind of relates to this. And you'd be like, oh, wow, yeah, I didn't even draw that connection, but that is totally there, you know? And I've always thought that was cool. It's a very interactive way to enjoy the music with the people we share it with.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be right to talk to you guys without talking about Strange Music.
Yes, sir.
You know, you guys, you know, ended up on the label. They were already fans when they signed you, right?
I think I don't know how familiar Tech was with us, but he ended up getting our music through a mutual contact, one of our managers, and Dave Weiner took it to him from that mutual contact, and he loved the music. But at the time, they weren't really signing anyone. They had just signed Stevie Stone prior, and then you know waited a couple of months, and then they Dave Weiner arranged it for us to open up for Tech on the Independent Grind Tour in Orlando and Fort Lauderdale. So we ended up going to do those shows, and that was right in the beginning of like what I feel like was our prime, like, you know, setup for our live show and how hype and energetic it was. And Tech saw it and like fell in love with the show, and the whole crew loved the show as well. So the word got back, and within a couple of months we were in Kansas City inking up a deal with them.
How has the strange audience, which, you know, is very specific, I think, in what it likes. You talked about how you kind of bent your music to their expectations almost without realizing it.
Yeah, it was just like they love Tech so much, and Strange is such a strong brand that it's intimidating to come in as an outsider to that or as a new addition, especially when the majority of the artists on the label were all from the Midwest and namely Kansas City. So we were coming out like, wait, you know, we're coming out from Miami. We're a 6-piece band of like bearded, like pirate looking motherfuckers, and like coming into this label of like rap Midwesterners, you know? So like, it felt a little strange and intimidating to us to come into that crowd. And you know, we're opening up for Tech on All Sixes and Sevens tour. We haven't released any music with Strange yet. We did 65 shows, and that was kind of like our introduction. So you're there, and you know, we're in meet and greets, and people are like, you know, fainting to meet Tech and like the rest of the crew, and then they're like, oh, and hey, how are you guys, like who are you again, like. So it's just like it was just like an interesting and intimidating grind in the beginning, because we had a lot to prove, and you know, that was why we went so hard in the beginning with, you know, showing them what we do, and also showing them that we understand, appreciate, and also can produce the kind of stuff that they've been, been expecting from Strange for years.
Yeah. And how do you feel like their audience has reacted to you? I mean, I guess it's been, you know, two records now and a little bit of time.
I feel like it's been good. We've gained a lot of fans from them, and what's great about their fan base is like, if they love you, they love you. If they don't, they don't, and they let you know, and then they keep it moving. It's not really, there's no like gray area. So it's either like we've gained a lot of fans and made some incredible diehard fans from the label and our affiliation with them, and then, you know, the people that were there that really didn't dig our sound or didn't dig the differences that we brought to the label, they just, you know, they just keep doing their thing, and that's it. Never the two shall meet. It's been great, and it's built a lot into our sound, and I feel like now we're entering the phase where we're starting to cruise with our comfort level of like what we really do, and the balance between what we know Strange fans love and what is true to us.
Yeah, is it true there's one tour you did with Tech where you guys did like 82 shows in 84 days or something insane?
Yeah,
like that?
We did 94 in 105 days.
How do you...
Apparently they say it's the Guinness World Book record for the longest consecutive rap tour. That's what I've told. It was intense, man.
I'm speechless. I mean, I've done, you know, several month tours as a musician, but with like a normal amount of off days, I can't imagine, you know, barely essentially having none.
Yeah, I mean, it was for us. It was definitely intense. For me personally, I felt like because we were still so hungry and new, it was only our second tour with Strange. I was happy to, like, even at the end of it, I was still like enjoying it. I wasn't like dying to go home. But the thing that was killer for us on that run was the days off that they had scheduled got filled in by extra shows. So at one point we had like 26 shows, then one day off, and then another 28 shows or something like that. So talking one day off and 50 some odd shows, and that was brutal.
Yeah.
It's rough, man. You need one day a week, man, to just collect your thoughts and like just rest, especially for us, resting our voice, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it must have been something, though, to see the headliner doing that right along with you. Maybe in a little more comfort, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, everybody's doing it. Everybody's going in. And Tech's show is like, you know, we were doing a 25, 30 minute set. Tech's doing like an hour and a half, 2 hours. So, yeah, no, he definitely leads by example when it comes to grind. So we were happy to just be following along, you know, and doing our thing.
That leads into something I wanted to talk about as far as touring, which is like you guys write a lot about, you know, the grind and being on the road and the struggle and so forth, you know, on that end. But when I see you perform, it, you know, it always looks so joyful. What can you talk a little bit more about what touring is like for you?
It's just fun, dude. I mean, it's like you don't have to worry about shit except making some fun time, you know? So, yeah, touring is the best because it's like, you know, when we're here home, we're constantly writing. So we're constantly like in our heads and making music. And tour is like, it's great because you get to like fill up the life bank. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get to like, you know, create some new experiences to write about and meet some people. And it's just an adventure, you know? I'm sure... You know, talk to me, you know, 5 years down the road after I've been doing this for a few more years and I might feel a little differently about it. But right now it's still all pretty new to us and pretty fresh and exciting, you know.
And yeah. Plus where we live, too, as far as music's concerned, is so far out of the loop that it's easy to like forget, like without the internet, like stay off the internet for a few days. And it's easy to forget that there are people out there that really enjoy the music and like have your band name tattooed on them. So it's like it's always a joy to like go out into the middle of the country and meet people like face to face that feel so good about the music and like are happy to share with us how much the music means to them. And that always like helps drive us further.
So being on Strange, are you guys ever tempted to do that like double time tongue twisting shit that that Tech does?
I be coming like an Autobahn, I'm murdering everything, I'm a killer with a mission to flip it. I'm sick with the gift of the lip and I be itching to give it the whiff of the wicked. I stick it with the crick and they digging there. Yeah. Nigga, like I said it before, I'ma get up and go and get it because I'm missing malignant and keeping you riveted, living in polygamous in a bit. In a chicken, I'm in a second, I need to be kicking it. I flow for the Middle West, go for your little neck. Don't let me get it with your hoe, I'ma get it wet. Stop and drop on top.
I mean,
ooh, Rep does it. Yeah. Rep does some of it.
I used to do it. I like my first like record was like a white label single called Problem that indie label South Beat put out, and on Problem I was doing a double time, you know, kind of like bounce flow.
Come on. In a jungle with a Latin bomb that makes beat his ass look half as strong. I struggle with the rapping job and take heed to every classic song. On down to the freak show with the weak flow that you passing off. Y'all but the motherfuckers ain't half as on. Y'all shaking shutter like a satin soft. Breaking down.
So like that single, like there was joints back in the day where I would try to pick up the speed and that was always an interest of mine. But yeah, when
it's not the main focus of how
it's
we rock,
not yeah. The main focus, yeah. And when we signed to Strange, that was like I saw what Tech was doing and was like, that looks like a lot of fun, and I'd love to join him a little bit and like you know, whatever. I've always been a technical rapper, I feel. So I saw him doing that, and it was like, okay, how do I increase the level of difficulty? I'd love to try some of that. And I think when I signed to Strange on our first Mayday albums, I definitely tried to add that into the mix a little bit. But when I did my solo album, I made sure not to do that on the opening track because I still don't want it to define me. I think no rapper really wants that to define him. Ritz might be the only one that I feel like his flow he loves is so signature to him that he doesn't mind it always being at the forefront. But Tech loves to change it up and doesn't want that to always, he doesn't want to be the fast rapper guy, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think even the fast rapper guy, you know, Twist or whoever, doesn't necessarily want to be known as the fast rapper guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's fucking exhausting. So it's like, you think about like what a, like read a pop song lyric or like a, you know, someone who's singing a lyric, that lyric sheet is like, you could fit it on a notepad, like a sticky pad or whatever. But like when you're doing triple time raps, that's like pages of rap, you know, like pages of writing. It's very strenuous. It takes a lot more effort and time.
Yeah. You know, winding down, there was one lyric in particular that I was curious about as I was re-listening to stuff today. You know, on Fire, you kind of criticize Common a little bit on that tune.
Bombs dropping on a Gaza Strip, race playing a card in politics. Seen kings and queens ain't got no faces, but Common thinks we can't mix our races. It's a child.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was really mad at him at that point. I mean, still kind of am. I was a huge fan of his for years, and I always thought he was a very like forward-thinking, like revolutionary kind of dude. And then when he came out talking about like interracial relationships and like how he didn't feel that was right.
State senators, life swirls, most sell out like a jet with a white girl. You want me to sight?
Black men walking with white girls on their arms. I'll be mad at them as if I know their moms.
Like he had a very like antiquated view on interracial relationships, which really bothered me, and that really like irked me at the time. Like, so I just felt like it was a bit hypocritical of him. So at the moment, I was very vocal about how I thought he was super hypocrite at the time. I'm still a fan, but it's just I just think that like his view on that sucks. It's like very, I just don't get it at all.
And Burns, I know in addition to rapping, if the one random article I read on the internet can be believed, you're quite a cook.
Yeah, man.
Now he's gonna be humble right now, but he throws it down.
I throws it down a little bit.
What's your current favorite recipe?
Current favorite recipe, man. I'm fucking with like like slow cook stuff, like short ribs and like pork shoulders and shit like that. You know, I'm that's kind of what I'm on right now, bro. You know,
and as a customer, I'm gonna say he's got a mac and cheese that'll compete with the best of them.
But you know, mac and cheese is like whatever. That's, nah, but that's best basic level cooking. You know,
to me, that mac and cheese is godly.
I like slow cooked, roasty kind of stuff, man. You know, that's what I'm on right now.
Nice. So how do you do that? Is there crock pot action or what's happening?
Yeah, I have various methods. Actually, I have a crock pot. I have a convection oven. You know, I got the regular oven, and then I'm trying to get my smoker and shit like that. But
wow, that's some next level right there.
That's next level. I don't have that yet, but I'm working on it, man. You know, I'm trying to. My folks are like big grill, like because of Latin. You know, Latin people love to grill and shit, so we're always grilling and shit, and big kind of grill guy. You know.
Excellent. Well, next time I'm down in Miami, I expect a cookout in my honor.
Oh, bro, it's on. It's so on, bro.
Very, very cool. So what well, you mentioned at the top, but a little bit, but what's going on in May Day world now? What are you guys up to?
Well, we got an album coming out in August. So basically that's what we're working on right now. I'm working on a solo effort that I hope to have out, hopefully like second week in March or third week in March. But that's just going to be like a little EP just to kind of warm the waters and let people know that I'm out here, that I'm, you know, what my solo music sounds like and stuff. So, that's the immediate. So first my shit in March, Mayday album in August. And then Gianni, one of the producers in the band, he's going to be putting out a solo effort, kind of like, you know, Khaled, like when he brings together a lot of different rappers and artists and stuff like that, like one of those kind of vibes. And that'll be out hopefully before the year's out, you know, like I'd say sometime in the fall, late fall, you know.
Very cool. We haven't really talked about Gianni much. Now, he produced almost the entirety of Believers, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think when by the time Believers rolled around, it was definitely the production is a big group effort. But, you know, he's definitely like the main starter of certain of like the majority of the tracks, you know, like we'll take the beginning of his reference in the beginning of the meat and potatoes of what he did. And then we'll all kind of as a group, we'll come in and we'll start to like add stuff and things that we might need as the song starts to, you know, get written basically, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, Gio is basically our main producer and then everybody else is kind of like, you know, the supporting cast, you know?
Interesting. And so I guess I was curious about how you write songs, because, you know, as someone who spent a lot of time in rock bands, like I hear your stuff and it sounds to me like, oh, it's, you know, four guys, six guys, you know, in a rehearsal room kind of banging out stuff together. Is that not the case?
No, man. I mean, it's like a lot of like, you know, this is look, hey, I started this. What do you think? Oh, that's great. Let's fucking work on that. You know what I'm saying? And then or it'll be like, hey, yo, I got this fucking idea for a song, like, hey, you know, Fat Girls Rock. Oh man, that's a good idea. Let's fucking do a song about that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just that, like, basically we're like we're all writers and we're a factory and we like to come into work every fucking day. And we basically do a song a day, whether it's for me, whether it's for Rec, whether it's Gio's. And when you get to that point, when you're already at like song number 400 with each other, like who starts a song, who finishes a song, who whatever, is like all of that is just so blurred, you know?
And who does what? Who plays what?
Everybody plays everything, you know?
Yeah.
Gio will play the bass or guitar on something, and then I'll play a bass lick, or Rec will come and play a keyboard lick, or, you know, or add a sample to something, or sometimes, like a lot of times, we actually literally make our beats like round robin style, which we have a game that we play, like, which is like, You have to add one sound in 10 minutes, and then you have to get up and let the other person come in and add the next sound. So literally, we've made beats that are like each sound is produced by a different person. You know what I'm saying? Like just to kind of like get the workflow going. You know?
That's so interesting. And the drums on your stuff, are they live? Are they from machine? Does it vary?
Yeah, it's a combination of both. You know, we have a you know a drummer in Noms that's pretty good, and and technology allows us to do a lot of other things too. So it's a combination of both.
I think, my favorite of our stuff is always when we find the perfect balance between live played drums and programmed drums. So it still has the thickness of like a hip hop record, but it has the air of like rock drums.
Yeah. And, you know, I've talked to other rappers about this before, but I was curious as to your take on it. Like, is it different for you rhyming over a more sort of traditional straight rock drums and a more like hip hop groove?
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like it feels different, dude. You know, a great example is like listen to Zach De La Rocha rap over a Rage record and then listen to him rap over a regular like hip hop record.
Shatters the calm of the day like an alarm. So wake up, brighter you, and take up arms. Cause more is necessary than vocabulary war. Cause a toxic rock imports hitting on your door. See,
and it's like, it's the same rapper, but it's like not the same rapper, bro. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's something about the live element that brings a whole kind of spiritual, guttural thing out of like certain rappers, you know? Other rappers sound better over the sequenced kind of shit. You know what I mean? For me, it just sounds better. I sound better over a certain type of like aesthetic, you know?
Excellent. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to talk to us. Any final things you want our audience to know?
That we love you guys.
We love you, man. Thanks for having us.
All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
See you for the cookout.
I had gotten to meet Recognize and Burns once or twice prior to this conversation, but never really talked to them in depth. It's uncommon that a group will admit to changing their sound for any reason other than purely artistic ones. So it was interesting to hear them admit to changing their style a bit after signing to Strange, even if it was an almost unconscious response to fans' expectations. I really enjoyed hearing about their songwriting process. The idea of writing songs about specific things while trying to be a little more impressionistic and not quite so on the nose. I also really loved uncovering the theatrical side of Recognize's personal history, his life as a theater kid and his famous comedian grandfather. I'm really looking forward to hearing the next iteration of the group's sound, now that they're comfortable enough with their presence on Strange Music to try to sound like themselves again. Join us next week when we talk to Brooklyn Addy's finest, Don Will and Von P of Tanya Morgan, about why Just Blaze won't listen to their music, what it was like surviving riots in Cincinnati, and the funniest way to lose your virginity. You can find The Cypher on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at The Cypher Show. Hit me up, let me know what you thought of the show, suggestions for future guests, anything you want to talk about. Also, one last time, rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Visit us at thecyphershow.com to hear or get information about this or any other episode. You can also find links to all of the songs played in this show on this episode's page. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sitaro.
I don't know. Specialization is for insects, man.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Pork shoulders and shit like that. You know, that's kind of what I'm on right now.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
But he just focused on like Latin America.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher. What the fuck else? Oh.